Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, welcome, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining again. This is going to be fun. I guess we should talk about what's happening because it's like, you know, the January, February, March season is crazy for our studio because every company has those beginning of the year pushes to get all their information flow ready or out. And we're swamped doing all kinds of cool stuff. How about you guys?
Yeah, things are picking up. I think I mentioned last time that all my clients seem to have recovered from their flus and gotten back from the vacation. So a lot of stuff.
How are you doing on that?
Yeah, I'm about like 90-95% done with mine, but
okay,
I've still got a bit of a Barry White thing going on.
I like
so,
it.
Yes. So things are coming in fast and furious. You know, clients, can you do an out of town training like in a week and a half? And you know, a couple of big templates are rolling in and getting started. So that's what I got going on.
Well, I've had a fun diversion. I have a client that has me working on PowerPoint games, which is something I've really never played
really?
With. Yeah, it's very, very.
We should totally talk. This would be exciting.
Yes.
What are you going to do? We got to know.
Well, it's just plays on, let's see, Family Feud.
We should totally talk.
Okay.
Literally, two weeks ago, we just did a huge Family Feud. Very elaborate, very amazing. Hey, here's a really good tip. We'll just start off because it has nothing to do with today's topic. This is really cool if you're going to run the game show, which I'm assuming, Sandy, if you run Presenter View.
Yes.
So you're going to have your Presenter View in front of you and the audience sees the main screen. Mm-hmm. You can interact with triggers on Presenter View. You have been able to do it for a while. Just people. Yeah. So when you move your mouse around to like click a trigger, like we had the survey says, and you know, the top five answers, we have those boards already there and you click it and they flip over. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to move your mouse to click it. Well, if you do it in Presenter View, it just happens magically out there. No one actually sees your mouse. So people don't realize you can do trigger animations in Presenter View.
Okay.
To make the,
that's really cool.
It's awesome.
So it looks just like the host, what's his face, is up there. Yell, you know, someone's behind the scenes, just like you are.
So Nolan, to go with your voice thing, this is the funny thing about this game show we did. It was very elaborate. We storyboard out the whole thing. Everybody knows the rules. Everybody knows everything but the actual questions. Host, meeting planners, and players all know what it is. And it was a lot of fun. This one was really fun, Sandy. This was really cool. I'm taking another diversion on the sidetrack. What the company that brought us in did is it was their clients. So they service large corporations, you know, Home Depot and insurance companies and all these other ones. So they actually had their client teams come up and be the family. So it was this client versus this client talking about us.
Oh.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
It worked out really good. But so to go back to the original distraction there, in addition to the whole theme show music and everything, our host was just getting over the flu and basically had laryngitis and could not talk loud for the life of her. And she was so enthusiastic and it was so, just so cringeworthy. But it was really hard because no one else could take over because she was the only one that knew all the questions and was like kind of knew the gameplay. Yeah, we should talk, Sandy. We totally do
that's
these.
Great. Well, that's great.
For those who have not been to the Presentation Summit, one of the highlights is the PowerPoint game show every year, which
the
trivia game, and it is a very interactive, very there's a lot of stuff going on. And Sandy is always a judge for that. I'm always a little jealous.
It's really fun. I think I've only made a couple of mistakes over the last, I don't know, seven or eight years.
it coincides with an open bar, so it's all good.
Yep. Everyone has a great time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm also working on templates like Nolan and some corporate presentations.
So we've been doing a lot of fun stuff too, like the game show. We're actually planning another game show. This one's an interactive one for.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So yeah, we do lots of them. They're very, very elaborate, very fun, very stressful because, you know, you only get one shot at it when it's a, live event.
Yeah, they're also right. very fun. They're problem solving exercises, which are fun to do.
Yeah, it's usually limitation exercises. We try and keep it all in PowerPoint. Actually, I've never done one in Keynote just because it doesn't have the interactivity options. We used to do them in external programs. I used to actually create them in Director is where we started way back when. And then we finally decided we could do almost everything in PowerPoint. So like the scorekeeping on this one was me behind one of our graphics, one of our graphics ops was actually the primary and she was running the main show and I was behind running the scoreboard. So for the audience, it just looks amazing and it automatically tabulated. In reality, it was me adding up numbers as fast as I could and typing them in and putting them on screen when they called. It's all fun.
Very fun. So let's go on to news. I wanted to bring up this, what I think is huge. Microsoft and Publicis Group are partnering to help publicists launch a program that they're calling Marcel. It's an AI platform.
And we should back up because this was like, I'm not sure I fully understand. Publicis Group is like one of the mega like branding agencies, right?
Absolutely.
They're a holding company for all sorts of different agencies.
Saatchi & Saatchi, Leo Burnett, Fallon in the Twin Cities, which is huge. You know, they were the original Porsche agency. It's huge. They are global holding company, and they want to enable their employees and clients to communicate and collaborate better. So they have literally partnered with Microsoft to make this happen. I watched a video with Satya. Is that how we say his name?
Satya.
Oh, the head of Microsoft, yeah.
Yep, and the CEO of Publicis Group. And it's a really, I think it's groundbreaking in that this huge organization that holds agencies who are notoriously anti-Microsoft is making this announcement. It won't affect us, from what I can tell, in the presentation world. But I just think it's great and big news.
Yeah, Microsoft's doing a lot of good stuff, and their stock price is reflecting that.
So, I was just reading an article last week. I want to say it was USA Today, but I'm not positive, so don't quote me on where it was. But it was basically Microsoft is once again the most innovative company. So, you know, that tagged with what you're saying, you know, one of the largest agencies, global holding agencies, you know, saying we're going to partner with you or we want to use your technology. It's kind of, And I mean, obviously there's a lot happening within our world. You know, they're continuously pushing the boundaries and letting us do more stuff.
I don't think every designer is going to have a Microsoft Surface Studio on their desk soon, but you know, maybe.
On the Microsoft note, they have an update to their iOS app. So iPads and iPhones, you can now do real-time co-authoring. So that's the big one. There are a bunch of other things, drag and drop and shared files and stuff. But this is all if you use SharePoint or OneDrive. You still have to do that. There's still no Dropbox support, so that's a non-starter for me. But if you do use OneDrive, you know, you can be making a change to a presentation on your iPhone and your colleague can be making a change to the exact same presentation right now. So it's all moving in the right direction.
Good news.
So for today, there's an art to the design project feedback, and often the success or failure of a project, it rests entirely on being able to give and receive the feedback effectively. In the past, I know we've discussed when to hire a professional designer, how to work with proofs. We've also touched on a lot of subjects related to presentation design. But this conversation today, we're focusing specifically on design feedback, and it's both from the client and also from the designer. So we're kind of looking at all angles of this because it is a crucial part to making a project, well, successful or failure inevitable.
Indeed, I think that there's a need upfront to establish rules or guidelines for feedback. And I want to know who's going to be giving and receiving feedback. You know, they know it's going to be me, but from your side, a client, who is going to be my key contact?
Yeah. So I think you identified it there. So I always want a single point of contact whenever possible. And I always put that into my contract. There's a, you know, it says on behalf of X client, so-and-so will be the contact. And on behalf of Nolan Hames Creative, it'll be me. Because when you start having multiple people giving you feedback, it leads down a really bad path. I mean, just this week I had a kind of a rush large InDesign project with a couple of consultants working, and the person who hired me put me off onto somebody else. But I said, you will be providing all feedback. Sure enough, another consultant starts sending me email with notes, and I had to a number of times sort of gently say, thank you for these notes, but please send them to you know, this other person.
Your point of contact.
Sure enough, you know, a day or so later, you know, my point of contact sent me some changes, and I immediately got an email from, you know, I released a version, and this consultant immediately, you know, emailed me, said, my changes weren't reflected in there. I was like, and then of course the consultant said, well, yes, that's because I made the decision, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, you need one point of contact.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There are those instances I'm working on conferences, and Troy, you'll relate to this, where I'm working with 15, 20 different contacts at a time.
I would agree. I mean, a project, we always ask for a single point of contact, and it's always funny when it's like an executive is the one that jumps in, you know, the CEO or the COO right. Suddenly says, hey, this needs to reflect this. And then I need to gently push back with, absolutely agree with that. We need to make the communication flow go through this junior person down mm-hmm. here. Could you please enable them to know that so that they can feed it to us so we can get it into the process? Because, you know, we only want to have a single voice, you know, representing your company. Yeah. We do that now. And the show site conference projects, though, like Sandy just said, the rules, they may be different. They're different. mm-hmm. You know, our contract, for projects clearly says is dependent on client feedback turnaround timing. If it's greater than 48 hours, it may impact the timeline of the proposed project timeline. So show site, it doesn't matter because you've got a deadline. The show is going to go live. You have right. to get it done. And that type of clause just isn't going to happen, because if somebody doesn't get back to you, you're still scrambling right up until, well, the person's on stage, you're often scrambling to still do stuff in the background. Traditional projects, we say, hey, you got to get back to us. We can't let it sit.
And, you know, we all make exceptions to sort of the single point rule. I mean, if sometimes you have a really tight team and they are kind of speaking in one voice and one person will say, you know, so-and-so is out today, I'm giving you the notes. Like, okay, fine. But there's kind of an art to explaining that, like what you said about the CEO.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't want to be rude about it, but you can say things like, you know, so that we don't miss anything, because the last thing we want to do is, you know, miss a note or whatever, you know, please put it all in one email from this person, blah, blah, blah.
This is like almost the same conversation about versions. I'm really big on versioning every proof, because, you know, as soon as you release a version, then somebody makes their edits and somebody else makes edits to the same version. They send it back to you like, wait, now I've got three versions of the same version, but they're all different. Which, how do I, you know, we have to reconcile them all, and then you come up with the conflicts. And it's kind of funny seeing how right before this podcast, we were just going through the merge conflicts thing on OneNote and all of us trying to figure out how it works. You don't get that option in PowerPoint when it's just separate versions sent out, and it can become tricky. So again, I actually run the versioning right back to the point of contact. You know, hey, we got to run this all back through them and let them be responsible for telling us what's what.
Okay. Well, I'll sometimes loop in the key contact. I'll say, thank you, CEO, for your feedback. Looping in so-and-so so that we can make sure, like you said, that we don't miss anything. I will look to so-and-so to confirm the edits I should be making. Nothing throws us more than somebody swooping in and changing everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an industry term, folks. Other than sort of setting that initial point of contact from the start, is there anything else you do at the beginning of a project to sort of set the stage for good feedback, effective feedback down the road?
Well, so we can kind of, so we as the designer can kind of frame the feedback. I always want to know upfront, we establish kind of what is the end use of this file? Mm-hmm. And as example, well, and also the technical specification, hey, is this going to be a live presentation? Is this going to be, we're doing this right now for another one. Hey, is this going to be live, this, that? Well, we turned out it's live, but on an iPad, you know, it's delivered in person. Like, well, that's very different than conference live. So working through that. But as example, it's always nice to know where this file is going to be used. And here's my example on that is that this happens more often than we like. We design a template or we design a presentation makeover. And the next thing, next request is, oh, and now we need to blow that up into a poster size for the breakout room. So they have a reference piece. I'm like, whoa, mm-hmm. whoa. Mm-hmm. We never talked about that. It's all designed right. to screen resolution. It's not really designed to blow up to 6 feet wide.
Yeah. But,
you know, if we would, especially with like a logo or something, if we're doing just like a little quickie thing, we might do it in PowerPoint, but if we know it's going to be used in other places, we're going to make that an Illustrator element, and then we're going to import it into PowerPoint, but therefore we have artwork we can work with for all those other uses. That end use is a big part for us.
You know, that's more a technical thing. I think on the design side, you know, we try to focus the conversation in the beginning and contracts on how the design will be informed. For example, mm-hmm. is it going to complement the brand style? You know, if we use a project brief, you know, we're going to ask questions. I certainly do this more with brand identity design for clients. So, you know, up front, you ask them, you know, what are you looking for? You try to get it in writing. For example, if they say, you know, we want something calm to, you know, evoke the Mediterranean, and then you give them back something with a soft blue and they say, I hate it. You go back to that initial conversation or that document saying, yes, but you wanted something calming. So that, you know, if you have to sort of get, I mean, that the project brief and all that stuff's another whole art in itself, but that will help frame the feedback down the road. Because if you don't have that, you have nothing to back up the conversation. They just hate
books. Exactly. Yeah. I think a good solid timeline helps set the stages. Not only do we indicate due dates, both on our part and the client's part for feedback, we set up meetings in advance to support those due dates. So for example, the first draft of the template creative concepts, we get on the phone together. I walk them through. I would never send concepts without me being able to sell them. And in those meetings invitations, we reiterate the objective of each meeting. So get client approval of creative direction.
Okay.
Get client approval of template, you know, that type of thing.
And do you have a little thing that says if the feedback isn't received, it could kind of adjust that timeline, kind of like I was saying earlier?
You know, that's a good idea to add it to that. That's a great idea. It's in the it is in the timeline, but not on the individual meeting invitations.
So how about this? Something I hear from clients a lot is giving feedback that may not be as helpful. Like, I don't know anything about design, but
will you do this? Yeah.
Well, so here's the question. Is it important for a client to know about design if they're going to give feedback?
Yeah. So I hear this all the time too. And I think it's the biggest fear or concern. I think certain clients have, certain clients don't care. They'll steamroll over you. But I think there's, it's their biggest concern. First of all, it's never going to hurt for them to know something about design. And honestly, if you work in the agency world, or if you are working with designers all the time, it probably is good for your career to know something. But essentially the answer is no, you don't have to, because you're hiring a professional. I don't know anything about plumbing, so I hire plumbers.
Right.
You need to be able to talk to the designer, right, in terms of business goals. And you should be able to talk to them in terms of what you want to accomplish. And I think that's the goal. Mm-hmm. So don't worry that you don't know CMYK versus RGB versus track, right, all that kind of stuff. But talk about your business goals. And it is the designer's job, our job, to interpret that, you know, into the product, mm-hmm. but also to, and this is a big one, to educate you with as much information as you need to know. So
absolutely.
I think that's right. Another thing that designers sometimes get, you know, they get more angry over than they should. It is your job to educate. So don't get angry.
It's our job to educate the client. Yes. It's the client's job to educate us on their content, right, so that we can and relate it to their business decisions. Yeah.
So design, we're kind of thinking visual design, but a lot of times design is how do we, presentation design is how does this information flow come up to the audience? And we have the conversation lots where now we're going right to the presenter. Well, we're going to bypass our point of contact. We've gotten past all the initiatives. Talk mm-hmm. me through this point. Like, what are you saying? Because you have a lot of content here. And I think it might be better to kind of chunk this for the audience. But I don't know what you're talking about first. I don't know what's important. Or mm-hmm. the inevitable, hey, you got a great table of data here. What are you saying about it? You know, exactly. Talk us, educate us on what it is you're trying to say, and we will interpret that into a visual presentation for you. So it's a two-way education. But yeah, we do a lot of what we call it client education or client training. Let's train the client.
Hand-holding.
Hand-holding, yeah, indeed. I recently did a bit of client training at an internal sales meeting that I had, I think it was 15, 20 presenters. I can't remember anymore. But the one gentleman whose content we had already gone through, whose flow we had already established, came to me and said, I know you're the expert, but I think we need to add a computer icon in the upper left corner so people know that what we're talking about. His rationale was to decorate the slide, to add another design element. It related nothing to the objective. So just in my feedback, I reminded him that I am the designer, that I am following the graphic standards that are established by his marketing communications group, and that he should not edit the design on any of the slides. I reinforced that I was looking for his feedback on content only. And of course, I could not have said any of this if I didn't have the complete support of the marketing communications lead. So I did have a single point of contact who was running the show internally, but she supported me in that effort to educate the client, the contact.
Well, you know, everyone has an opinion and you just heard his opinion, and his is probably nervousness about the conversation. You know, how am I going to present this? And I've had the conversation where I really need an icon to trigger, you know, we're trying to trim words, and I've had the request, like, I really need an icon somewhere in there to remind me this is the database conversation, or, you know, thing that your conversation didn't relate to that at all. It doesn't sound like
yours. No. He was decorating.
It looks too empty. Yeah. Let's decorate. Mm-hmm. You know, design is about creating art that appeals, is professional, and works for the human eye. I mean, as far as flow and information being the audience view, I take in all client input, and a lot of it is not good. You know, but we're going to take it all in,
right?
And then we go through that. Then we craft client education on how we're not going to use that suggestion, but modify it to, you know, this.
Yes.
Fill in the
yes.
blank. You know, I feel designers today do a lot more design and technical education than we did 15 years ago. 15 years ago, it was kind of still we're ending the big agency era. And it was kind of like, oh, well, you guys provided it. We should go with that. Cause I think people have more of an opinion now than they did when we kind of started. And the fact that the tools like PowerPoint is available to everybody's hands, I think gives them the ability to think they should have an opinion. And you get into a lot of discussions about branding. I mean, how many times are we brought in to do a corporate template and then a training to establish this template has branding guidelines, just like the rest of the company? It's not the Wild West.
Well, first, I'll say our friends at Publicis will disagree that the age of the large agency is over. But
What is over is the fact that everybody accepts what the agency presents. Now everybody wants to see what else, and they want to get they want to be involved. Yeah, everyone wants to be involved.
That, like, you know, I've said this too, right? But I mean, there's that thing out there. Everyone's a designer, right? Because they have PowerPoint on their desktop. That's a good and bad thing. Let's not go into that. But
what should we go into, Nolan?
Okay. So kind of back to Sandy. So should a client never challenge your work or challenge the designer's work? Like, yes, no, where could that?
Absolutely. I wouldn't be getting better if they weren't challenging me.
Wait, absolutely. They should challenge you. Absolutely. They should not challenge you.
They should challenge me.
Okay.
I get better when they challenge me. For example, and Troy, this goes to your point, the gentleman who wanted the computer laptop up in the upper corner, I was able to take that and I put screenshots in the computer, you know, in the screen of the computer, that type of thing. What he wanted to do was, he wanted to get the message across that these are screenshots that you can view on your computer. But he didn't tell me that, right? He just pasted computers on every slide.
Two-way education. Yeah.
It was awesome. So I love being stretched, but more in line with what we're discussing, it gives me the opportunity to reiterate the rationale for a design decision. So let's use more interesting font, or let's, I like orange better, would be better answered with, I'm adhering to corporate design standards. I would say Algerian and orange are not in your standards.
Nobody's standards.
So wait, let me interject first. So yes, it is often through the challenging statements that we learn information that we were not given up front. And I think that's a big part of it is there are not project briefs, like you were mentioning, Nolan, especially in the presentation world, they're not what they used to be. Nobody takes the time to flush out. No one takes time to fill out the entire scope of a project anymore. They kind of dump the amount of information and they let you run with it. And then you kind of have to have this education of what are we missing? Like what is the information? You know, why do you want orange in there? It's not your corporate standard or back to the blue scenario. Blue was what you kind of wanted, but what are you envisioning? You know, it's the fill in the blank thing that happens a lot. So yeah, I like that the client should challenge in the point that they're giving us more information that we don't know that we need to incorporate into the design, or we need to consider for the design, or we need to turn away from the design. I mean, there's all those reasons.
You know, they are writing the paycheck too. So signing the check.
Right.
So, I mean, they certainly have an opinion, and if they don't like where it's going from a design perspective, I think, you know, advice to clients is, you know, don't be scared of your designer, even though from a designer's perspective, sometimes we like that a little bit. But be careful on some of the tech.
Respect.
Yeah. Because on some of the, I would say be careful on some of the technical issues. I mean, you can always, you know, challenge aesthetic issues and like, oh, it's not meeting my marketing goal or whatever that we discussed. On technical things, I mean, hopefully you're hiring somebody who is an expert in that technical thing. In the technical field that they're working in. A few years ago, I had a client, a very, very large financial client, and we were creating a presentation or a template for them, and they insisted that they had sent us images to be used, and they were all 72 DPI, and they were clearly pixelated. Like the moment I put them up on the screen, I said, you know, can you send us some higher res ones? Do you have those? And they said, well, yes, we have them, but you don't need those. I said, well, yeah, because it's, you know, you can see it's pixelated. And he said, no, PowerPoint won't accept anything larger than 72 DPI. It's screen resolution. And I tried to explain. I said, well, but you can see clearly that it is blurry. He wasn't hearing it. And so ultimately we included them. And we
said, well, I mean, there was no paying the check.
Talking them out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't be a
again,
jerk that way.
You can't take everything personal, and you are getting paid for deliverables. They're just not always the deliverables you want. Yeah. So how about this? Does there have to be a justification for every bit of feedback we give or a client gives us? Can it just be, you know, does it have to be justified? Yeah. Let's just go there.
For me, no. I mean, ideally, most of the feedback is coming from a place of, you know, solving a problem, whatever. But I always make a point right up front in those initial conversations to tell the client, anything you want or don't want or anything I need should know. And that includes things I say that may not you feel have a justification. The example I always use is if your CEO hates yellow because that was his ex-wife's favorite color, tell me. Like, that's fine. Like, I just want to know that up front. I don't want to find that, you know, down the line. Like, that to me is a valid preference.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Let us know that kind of stuff. You know, don't hide it.
And then, okay, so then when the CEO doesn't like yellow, give me an example of what he does like if it's outside of the realm of your corporate standards.
Right. I mean, right. You don't want to get into the, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like red. Mm-hmm. I don't like blue. I don't like yellow. I don't like green. I don't like orange. It's like, okay. It's like, what's left?
Yep.
Gray. Lots of gray.
On the other hand, I have rationale for everything I do. You know what I mean? So if a client asks me why I did that, I have rationale. I can explain it. I rarely do something that I never say, well, I liked that. I thought you would like that. You know, it's based on original objectives, goals, the outcome that they want the PowerPoint to achieve, standards, all of that.
Hey, Sandy, hold on. Sandy, what? Wasn't... Is it your son or your daughter that was on like the debate team or whatever?
My son.
I wonder where he gets that from. Just putting two and two together.
But Sandy, so you've got to be careful with that because, yes, I can always rationalize, you know, my choices. But from a design perspective, there are certain subjective choices we make, right? I'm just starting this big template project for an agency, and what they currently have is competently designed. And in some cases, it's actually well-designed. So on the phone with their creative director, I said, you know, what you're sending me is, it's not bad. Like, it works. Mm-hmm. I understand if you want something different, but let's discuss that. Because I can just take this and redesign it, achieving the same goal, but it'll look different. Is that what mm-hmm. you're going for? So, you know, when somebody says, I don't like, you know, the layout of this, I can say, well, we did it because this, this, and this. But at the end of the day, it can be done a different way. If you just
absolutely
like it.
No, and I'm not saying I shove anything down. I have an answer for everything, and
you have
for the design. If they have a strong reason in their feedback that it needs to be changed, obviously I take that into consideration. It's good fodder for a great discussion.
So I get the question a lot, like, why did you choose this font? Well, you know, this is a sans serif, you know, feels very contemporary and it's open and it, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's why we chose that. I like that a lot. You know, we find that works well. Yeah, well, it's not quite working for us. Okay, but do you still want a modern contemporary? Yes. Okay, then we'll choose a different sans serif font, you know, and give that to you. So,
so going down, actually taking that example, when we do our initial, and I'm going to go for a one-off template. We're designing a one-off template. It's going to be used for an event, kind of loosely adhere to brand standards, and it kind of loosely has an event standard. So, you know, we're creating this, we do a lot of melding of creating the standards for things. One of the things we do now, it's evolved over, you know, the past couple of years, we send out the concepts. It's really fun because, you know, first of all, we farm it out to our team and we let everybody design a concept, and it's very, very loose mock-up concept. And basically whichever one the client chooses, that designer gets to win the prize of, hey, they chose me. But one of the things we do is we make sure that every concept has a different font face in the, it might only be two sample slides just to give them a look and feel, but we'll do different font styles and maybe there'll be three sans serifs. You know, it doesn't matter, but this way we're getting feedback from the client like, hey, please select one. We can mix and match. If you like the background styling of this one, we can use this font. Suddenly they feel empowered. So they're giving us feedback and making a decision at the same time.
That's a good point.
That's a really big thing for us. In addition to that, so for me, I think TLC Creative Services, one of our differentiators is client communication. Now, it's always how, when Lori and I founded the company, it's always how we did it because we worked behind the scenes with lots of other print houses and we had to communicate what it was we were doing. So it's just kind of evolved into more of a marketing stance, like, hey, we over communicate. And I got a great example of this. So one is, Sandy, we don't often get the opportunity to actually present our template concepts in person or via. So we're sending off a PDF document, but it's not, hey, here's three concepts. We give basically a project overview. Okay, mm-hmm. here's our three concepts. Concept one is based on this. Concept two is going for this. Concept three is this. And then it'll also list off, hey, there's three different font options, you know, reasons we kind of selected them or we want you to consider them. So we're doing this whole communication thing up front. But I have a really great example. You know, some projects, that level of communication is good. Few projects, it's like, no, we have to present this. Mm-hmm. We have to present this to you to kind of explain why there are ramifications to the decisions being made. I have another client. We just did it's a very large medical device corporation, and we were asked to develop an event template. They have an amazing brand style guide. Let me tell you, this is amazing. Every detail. I mean, it's a multinational conglomerate organization, and they decided to have standards for everything. So mm-hmm. there are some very, very tight rules for what you can visually do. And it's amazing how all of their content is very, very similar or within brand guidelines. Now, here's the point. We had multiple designers go through the corporate 2-hour brand guideline training. So right there, it tells you these guys are serious. Mm-hmm. For the template concepts, we literally, every design decision was annotated to assure and show it was within brand standards. So we presented four concepts. we literally had screen captures and then arrows all the way around it or numbered things that listed off what colors were used, showing that none of them were outside brand standards. Mm-hmm. We listed off fonts. None of them were outside brand standards. We listed off imagery because imagery has some very, you know, everything was annotated. End result, it was a three, actually, there was only three template layouts. So we had three template layout concepts we're giving them. We delivered it as a 15-page brief that detailed everything.
That's cool.
Yes. We still receive feedback even after we detailed it all, you know, with like, hey, we need to change this or why is this there? But we were the only company that I was very excited about this. We were actually told we're the first company ever to receive a personal thank you from the head of brand standards for the detailed and wonderful work that made their job so much easier.
Wow.
Our company was approved also on the second round. Normally, this is like a 4-month process. We got it done in like 3 weeks. It was awesome. So that we gave them what we'll call communication or feedback, and they gave us back, you know, their feedback was so limited and so precise. It made the project so easy, but there was definite communication even within some very narrow parameters, and it's awesome when it works.
That's a great example. It wouldn't hurt for me to do that even though I present my concept.
Oh, it took hours. That presenting the concept would have been so much less painful. It would have been, you know, in the fact that there wouldn't have been as many billable hours. I mean, we could prep it all. We could have all our notes and we could present it and explain it all. Prepping this 15-page bio was about a 45-hour project. It's time consuming to communicate. And I think
absolutely.
That's another problem is time.
Well, so to that point, though, of having that meeting, I would have had to make sure that not only did I have my key contact in there, but I had the brand, the
stakeholders,
all the stakeholders involved in that meeting. And that is key when that's something we need to agree up front. We were talking earlier about what we do up front. Okay, in these meetings, who needs to be at the meetings? Who are going to be the decision makers and who are going to be stakeholders?
So what are some helpful words specifically that we like to hear or that we don't like to hear from clients?
Well, let's clarify, they're not all helpful, but we do hear a lot of the same things.
Right. We talked about earlier, I don't like or I like, because like is subjective. Make it more readable.
Is that a helpful or unhelpful one?
Well, I have to ask. I have to ask, what do you mean by making it more readable? Well, I think it shouldn't be white on dark blue. I think it needs to be black. Black is a darker color.
Let's work on removing words and content so it's more readable so there's audience can read it faster, interpret. And so subjective, and you got to clarify those things. Indeed. Those are not helpful. Those are good that you're getting an opinion, but they're not enough detail to actually take action on usually. Or you're guessing and then you guess the wrong direction. It's like, why'd you do that? Following your feedback. That wasn't my feedback. Yeah.
Helpful feedback is helpful when it relates directly to the objectives of the
presentation. What are some other phrases that we get?
Make it pop.
Make it pop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make it pretty.
Oh, yeah. I prefer. That's always my favorite. That's kind of like I like. Except for in this case, I think I prefer. I would take that statement over I don't like it. You know, I prefer is amazingly helpful because suddenly you get this, well, what do you prefer? You know, you've been given an opening to say, what do you prefer? So I can take action on that. So I think that's a good one.
We talked about make it pop. This kind of goes back to that single point of contact. One of my biggest gripes is it, let's say you have this junior person and they're getting feedback in the right manner from the CEO, but the CEO says, make it pop. And then the junior person says to you, Troy, okay, make it pop. And you say, okay, what do you mean exactly by that?
And they don't have feedback answer.
Right. So if you are this, or whoever, you know, regardless of your level, if you are the one point of contact and somebody gives you feedback, if you don't understand it, don't give it to the designer. You need to understand it because you need to justify it and explain it.
That's a great statement because that would solve a lot. So what do you do when you get that? Hey, make it pop as your feedback. And the person says, I don't know, but we need the new proof tomorrow. Well, we need to clarify what make it pops means. Like, I don't know. And well, I'm not going to, the CEO's on an airplane. We're not going to get that feedback until tomorrow right. when the proof's due. I mean, what do you do?
It's hard. I mean, sometimes you can look at it together and say, okay, so do you mean that this bit of information is getting lost, you know, on the slide mm-hmm. or on the screen? And they might say, yes, that's exactly it. Or, you know, it doesn't help if they just say, well, it just needs something. Okay.
What do you do there, Sandy?
I will work with my key contact to come with an agreement. And this could be a potential time waste, but you're right. They need something by tomorrow morning. So we agree on what makes it pop together. We brainstorm. And then when I send it, I reiterate that my contact in an email, my contact and I discussed making a pop and we agreed to do this. The attached file reflects that, or this link reflects that.
Wow. Now I feel like a schlep because I don't actually go for their opinion. If it's clear this person doesn't have the input, we design, in that case, we'll design an option or maybe two. And I include right on the slide, which is a PDF. So we'll put a note in there, what we call green box notes. We'll say, direction was to make it pop in quotes, uncertain of how that is to be reflected. So this is an option where we minimized words to make, you know, the message larger, or we'll do another one where we felt this one could be supported by an imagery. So I kind of explain the rationale and then that gets sent off and we wait for we inevitably know there's more feedback coming because there's no way we're getting this right.
No, that's what I do. You're not a slouch or whatever you said you were.
Well, you're asking for opinions and getting input and teamwork. And I'm just like, let's just go with this.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly sometimes you get to the point of just throwing stuff against the wall. And that comes back down to the subjective thing. Like, okay, let me give you three other things that also work, you know, three other options, you know, from a design perspective. And they're all valid. You know, does one of these pop?
But I do it for self-preservation. It's collaboration, right? But I document it in the return that so-and-so who did not ask you, CEO, what pop meant, we agreed to move forward on this. So it's a documentation step.
Ledger.
Okay. Now we actually have a design log. Everybody inputs their, you know, the timing and what was done, but we also have a tandem to the design log is a tandem of the project log. Design log is here's the work we did and things we submitted so we can justify our billables. The design log is we'll have dates like client change direction, going with all blue versus gray. Like, okay, crap, that's a big deal. But, you know, we have this log for most projects, like any turning point, or in this case, it would be CEOs requesting without input. And you can kind of correlate the days. Like, why did we just have 12 hours logged to this project at the concepting stage right here? You look over the notes, go, oh, on that, like the day before that, we got this very vague input. So we justify it. And or I should say, we're prepared. Any client that has a question, I can almost guaranteed provide a rationale for why things did happen the way they did.
Right. You guys are way too organized for me. Hey, what about a client providing feedback in the form of examples or other designs or other work?
Oh, that's awesome. As long as it's within brand standards.
Oh, do you like it? Well, that's the kind of thing we'll ask for up front. And I'll always say, hey, if there's a website you like or, you know, design, it doesn't have to be presentation or what, like just show that. So if there's something you hate, you know, show that to us. But what about when you're well into a project?
Oh, that's a little different scenario.
They send back a presentation that they saw or a friend of theirs did or whatever. And they're like, make it like this. We like this. Is that helpful? Mm.
Okay. It's a good point. What you have to do in that case is ask questions. Why do you want to change? Why is this something you like versus what I've presented? Why or how does it relate to our objectives? Is this are you changing the direction now? I'll ask them, is this a change in direction? Mm-hmm. Because we can do that, but it will impact our timeline and the outcome.
And the budget. I'm in the back of my mind going, you know, these questions, these come up all the time. And it's a question of, yes, but we've gone down this path of three iterations on this one, you know, model. And suddenly, you know, to shift it is totally valid, but it may not fit within the budget because it's going to take us another three iterations to come up with that styling. Mm-hmm. You know, can you afford it timeline wise? And can you afford it budget wise? If it's a, you know, those are hard.
Since we all hire and employ other designers, have you been in a lot of times we'll ask that we won't show them certain things because we want to see what they come up with, right? And it could be a test or it could be, hey, you know, design this and what comes back we're not happy with. So what about giving feedback to other designers? Because I've certainly been in a situation where I, you know, hey, what do you got? Let's see what you can come up with. Sometimes it's amazing and sometimes I'll just do it myself or I'll just use this thing that I didn't show you to begin with because it's already better and it's just not working. Sometimes I'll hide that. Sometimes I'll be upfront about it depending on the relationship and situations.
I give them everything I have. All the information I have. I don't think we can, just like with us, we can't expect them to come up with something on target if we don't have the same information.
Well, yes, but I mean, here's an example, timelines, okay. Right? We're always designing different timelines. Sometimes, you know, a slide will come in from a client and there's a timeline, it's designed, but I don't love it or it's not as good as it can be. You know, sometimes I'll take the information out and give it to designer, and this may be the different types of designers I do this with, and I'll say, hey, here's the information. We need a timeline. Go for it. Because if I give them what's already designed, they'll more often than not just work off that. And they're not sort of starting from scratch and thinking about it from scratch. So it is manipulative maybe. But
no, I'm totally in there with you, Noel, on that one, because like templates, we give an outline of what's there or what's requested, but I don't give any visual cues because I want very unique concepting to come out of it that all has the same end or underlying design needs or design, you know, brand standards, you know, something else. On timelines, I did a blog post a little while. I'm trying to find it right now. I did a blog post a little while ago and it was actually a live project. The client gave us a timeline and it was one of those ones that was just, it was it was like a whole year's worth of timelines crammed into one slide. Like, you know, this really isn't practical. So we turned it over to actually four different designers, said, hey, we got this timeline. We got to come up with a way to represent this. We're allowed to break it up. We got it. You know, the client's going to have to sign off on what the breakup is, this and that. And it was really, really cool in the fact that everybody saw the original, but they knew that the original was so dense, you knew it couldn't be done that way. And the design is, so what you're looking for, Nolan, is, hey, I want fresh ideas. I don't want to dictate the idea.
Right. Or
it worked.
Yeah.
In this case, we got some like, you know, that's really not going to work, but that one's really cool. And hey, how do we do this and that? It's sometimes a good thing, but you got to prepare for it not working, you know, not meeting the end goal of what you see as the goal. And you kind of play art director at that point and say, okay, we gotta make a decision. And my decision is we're going to go a different route.
So what about, okay, so back on designers, as designers, what do we have to say about receiving content from client? What should we know? Should we let our feelings get hurt?
I do take everything personally, and that's one of my weaknesses, but I swear it's what makes me great at what I do. I take it, okay, what can I do? How can I be a better at creating presentations by getting this feedback? I try to, I guess it's my glasses half full approach. If I get that negative feedback, how can I make it better next time?
That's healthy. Okay. So Sandy, just lay back on the couch. Let's analyze it. It's not you being criticized. Don't take negative feedback too personally. I personally have a saying that, and this is a well-known saying, I've probably said it before, but people know what they don't like when they see it, but they cannot explain up front what they do like. So a lot of times it's, we're going to just give you iteration after iteration until something clicks, because every iteration we design is good. And you tell us which one resonates and that's the one we're going to go with. And suddenly we have a design direction. So, okay, Sandy, you can turn the lights back on and, you know, I think a lot of designers do take things too personally. I mean, exactly. Logo design, when we did branding, you know, you'd take, Nolan, when you're doing a logo, you probably do, you know, you've got 50 iterations of a logo, but you're like, I can't give this to a client. That's overwhelming. Right. So you pick four, you give the client four and they just shred them all. You're like, oh, so my interpretation did not match yours, but ultimately what they're looking for is like your 42nd iteration. Like, oh, you know, it's not personal. It's just a matter of everybody has an opinion at this stage, and you kind of got to work through what their point of view is. And you have to sometimes say that's a really bad decision because that's not going to project.
Yeah.
That won't work in a one color embroidery or an app icon. That will not size down or scale down well to be used in any way. There is no way we can make this work in the multiple iterations it needs to be used. So yes, it's a great idea, but no, it's not something we can go with for these reasons. What do you want to do? Okay, fine. Just pay me. We'll do it.
Yeah. So Cole Nafflick runs Storytelling with Data, which is, if you're into data viz, you definitely need the book and check in with her on her website. So she's got a new podcast now. And her first one, it was all about feedback, actually. And she created a list of things that differentiate a good designer from a great designer. And number one on the list was a great designer.
Take mine out.
A great designer takes critique simply as that and not a personal attack. While we're on that, she had a really good discussion specifically about data design on just being sensitive to the creators when critiquing data visualizations. And I think this is a little bit more in that world than just presentation, because it's very popular now for people online to very quickly, it's very easy to critique a chart, you know, or something you see in the newspaper or whatever. But what she stressed was that you don't always know the context and the constraints. So the creator of that chart may not have had access, or the data might simply not exist to do the kind of thing that somebody's saying, oh, well, you should have done that. Or maybe they were pulling it together in a day. Or whenever you make a chart, you always make compromises. You always leave out certain things and include other things. And so, you know, again, it was a nice conversation about just being sensitive to the creators, and because you don't always know all that was involved, all the decisions, all the information that they had and didn't have.
That's good.
There's a lot of hard things to say about feedback, and sometimes feedback goes great. I mean, we love it when we give the options and they pick one and somebody feels empowered because they picked an option, but they picked it from three well-designed options and any of them are going to be good. So, hey, they feel good because they were the decision maker. That's the best type of feedback. Okay. How about this? How about if we, let's make this our final thing, because this could be fun. And I think we've already talked a lot about, but how about examples of that we have personally dealt with of really good or particularly bad feedback we've gotten? No companies, no names involved. Just, hey, what has or hasn't worked for you in the past, or just something that stands out?
We want a technical looking presentation, okay? Technical looking. So what does that mean? I don't know. I'll know when I see it. That I have been working on this presentation for 6 months. I've never in my career, I started doing this in 2001. I have never had a project like the one I'm currently working on.
Just make a graph paper background. And
that's technical.
Well, this has happened more than once, either at the beginning of a project or in the middle, which is again bad when they're sending design examples after you've presented. Mm-hmm. But what I see a lot is they'll send me things like Apple presentations or an ad that has, you know, a product and one word on it, or, you know, an Apple slide that has, you know, again, a product and a word or a couple words, and they'll say, you know, we'd like it more like this. We like all the empty space and the, you know, and the simplicity of it. And then I just have to go back and say, yes, but you are asking me to put 200 words on this particular slide. Your content doesn't match the content that these other designs had. So there's a disconnect. And usually that gets through to them. But I was like, but I always start with saying, hey, I agree. That looks fantastic. I'd love to do that. But you know what? You don't have the content that Apple had. If you want to work on that, we can do that. So that's frustrating feedback I get.
So this is I'm going to play off of Nolan here, because it was great feedback for us, but it was exactly the scenario you had, but there's a little twist to it. So the client comes to us, says, you know, we really want a simplified, very highly visual, minimal amount of content on slides, so everybody, you know, the presenter can get through the content rapidly in front. It's a, you know, very executive level meeting. You know, we don't want to be bogged down by charts. If there's a chart, we want to really streamline this and that. So great conversation. We feed, you know, our reply asking for additional feedback is, does a presenter know the content well enough to not need all the support cues on a slide? In other words, are they going to have a teleprompter? Can they read from notes? Will they have it memorized enough so that if we put the product and a single word, they know how to carry that whole message? Because designing it and presenting it are two different things a lot of times. You got to make sure the presenter is comfortable with it. So we get through this whole thing. Yeah, the presenter is comfortable with it. We're good with it all. I said, okay, what are you thinking? They send us an example presentation. They go, this is kind of the styling we're looking for. Look it over. Go, huh. We can absolutely give you that because we designed that.
That's funny. Have you ever had a speaker or a client come to you and want slides that are like Steve Jobs?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And then that brings it to the point again where, okay, yes, that's an awesome style. Are you okay with me putting all this content in your notes? That's how I'll approach that.
That's different. It's kind of the verbal way of saying I want minimal content. I think everybody uses that. Because Steve Jobs was the first person to really take presentation design to, I'm not going to bore you, I'm going to entertain you, and we're going to make this, you know, we're going to make this about me and the product, and the slides are there to support me, which is great because most people didn't even realize their slides because there's a lot of other things happening as far as staging going. But yeah, I think everybody gets that. And that's why we got to go right back. Can the presenter actually support that type of presentation, because we can design it. So here's feedback that you don't know what to do with. Award show, and we made a twinkly star look, and we made a star was the reason we went with kind of the star look is one of their trophies, or the main trophy was a crystal star shape, I guess I'll say. So we're like, oh, let's play off that. We got this, we'll do this and that. The feedback was, that's not a star. Well, I'm not sure what to do with that. A star is 5 points. And it actually took a lot of, that was really bad feedback. And the follow-up feedback was just as bad because it didn't help. It turned out we'd made a metallic star look, like this cool metallic glinting look that we could play off for the words. The award is crystal. They wanted translucent, this and that. So we're going like, is it the shape? Is it the size? Is it the background field of like twinkly starlights? What? I mean, it was, yeah. So sometimes the feedback is just so abstract, you can't even figure out what to do with it. Okay. So communication throughout a design project between the client and the designer, essential to ending up with a final deliverable that everyone is excited about. I will say that as the designer, we, design community, are not always as excited as the client because the client's just happy it's done. We're thinking it could have been so much more. And usually that does evolve around the feedback options. So communication, feedback, synonymous for this conversation. Don't make it complicated. Ask for feedback. Ask for clarification. Communication between client design, communication between client designer is communicating back to the client with a revised design that addresses their point and waiting for them to give you feedback. It's a cycle, and timelines and budgets are often constraints that affect it. So I hope this was an hour well spent for everyone joining us. Thank you. Please share the presentation podcast with other designers, meeting planners, event producers, your clients, and let's make this a bigger conversation.
All right, tech tips. What do we got? I'll kick it off. Mike Montero's book, You're My Favorite Client, very apropos for the day. I think I might have talked about his first one, Design as a Job, but You're My Favorite Client, he wrote to actually be given to clients.
It's a great book.
It's a fantastic book, all basically about how a client should work with a designer. And it's very, they do web design, so it's very centered on that, but it's really applicable, across design. So I've never given it to a client. I haven't quite taken that step, but if you are a client, you should read it. But if you're a designer, you should read it as well, because there's a ton about feedback in there, giving and receiving.
It's a great book.
So for mine, It's actually evolving around OneNote because there's a feature. It's newer. I just don't know how new. So maybe you two can clue me in here. So we use OneNote. I use OneNote for everything.
We use it for the podcast.
We use it for the podcast. Absolutely. All of our show notes and our ideas are in here. So one of the things that that has recently been added, and as example, the podcast, you know, we have all the show title or episode titles for 2017. You can indent things or put them underneath. So under the, what do you call the right-hand tab? You know, you're in your notebook and then you have your sections over on the right-hand side. You can subsection things by putting them underneath or sliding to the right. What they have added is the ability to collapse. So as example, I'm looking at 2017, there's a little down arrow. I click it. Hey, I can see all the titles for every 2017 episode. So what's improved is, it has a hierarchy or collapsibility. It has a collapsible hierarchy. So you don't have to have this, you know, 5-page long scroll to find something at the bottom. I think it's a great addition. It's only one level. So you can have like a primary topic like 2017, and then all the topics within it will collapse. But if you have one of those topics with additional ones, they don't have their own collapse yet. But I think it's just a really cool addition to the program. And it's made, well, my life a lot easier for limiting what I see every time I open it.
My tip for today is, and I'm attaching, there's a link in the notes. It's the creative blueprint. You gentlemen referred to it as the project brief. And I think it's relevant to today's podcast because if you at least on your end, you don't have to have the client complete it, but at your end, go through this process. And then when you have that upfront interview with the client, you can be completing it. You can be establishing goals, objectives, tone, all of that. That's going to help you through the process. If it is you perceive that it might be a difficult client, it's great to send it to them, have them sign off on it so that you have in writing an agreement on the creative direction. This would be in addition to your contracts.
So is that like a website or what is the creative blueprint thing? I haven't heard of it.
Creative blueprint that I've drawn up for my clients.
Oh, it's your internal document.
Yes,
are you getting it out?
You're sharing it?
I am sharing it.
And I suddenly got it. Like, oh, wait. Oh, really?
Yeah, sorry, resource. I wasn't clear about that. I think I'd mentioned it a while back in one of our first podcasts, but I think it's a very helpful tool. We were required to do it in the ad world, so I kind of carried it with me.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional graphic design studio focused on presentation design. If you'd like to find out about us, www.tlccreative.com. We have a blog, thepowerpointblog.com. We do stuff on Facebook with photos of where we're at and what we're doing. Facebook.com/TLC Creative.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and you can get lots of goodies and downloads from there. And if your organization is looking for presentation or data visualization training, or a combination of both, give me a ring.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And you can also find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPT Whiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.